Welcome to Easel Talk, the podcast for EaselInsight.com, with your hosts, Phil Stark and Gabor Svagrik. This podcast is created for artists by artists. To follow along with today's discussion, remember to download the show notes at EaselInsight.com/blog. And now let's get started with today's episode.
Welcome to Easel Talk. My name is Gabor Svagrik.
And I'm Phil Stark.
And today we're going to talk about intense color versus muted color.
That's right.
The color.
Which one is right?
Which one is better? The answer is none. It's, you know, color is one of these mysterious things, and we all see color differently. So again, this is Phil and I's philosophy here, our own experiences, and again, just we're hoping that it's going to help you in your journey. Question is a more colorful, bright, colorful chroma, colorful, when I say chroma is color, by the way, painting better than a more muted painting?
Yeah. Well, it is brighter than a muted one.
Yeah.
But aesthetically, not necessarily more beautiful.
Yeah. So. For I think for an uneducated eye, they would go for it.
Yeah.
Like bee to honey.
Yeah.
It's just pollen. It's not honey.
And that's right.
I don't know why people say bee to pollen. But a more sophisticated, when I say sophisticated, I'm not trying to put anybody in a pedestal here, but just somebody that knows more about paintings, they would go for more the muted. Yeah. It's just that's the reality. That's where the beauty lies in the muted areas, which will make the brighter areas brighter, actually. So right. That's what happens with color. It's an illusion. You can't put if you're gonna put a real bright yellow, like a cad lemon, next to a cad red, it's not gonna look as bright.
Right.
Just it won't. But if you take that cad yellow or lemon and then put it next to a mixture of ultramarine blue, a little bit of alizarin, a little raw sienna, a hair of white, kind of muted down, and then all of a sudden that yellow just glows.
Yeah.
So
stronger color next to some mud.
Yeah.
And that stronger color looks stronger. But again, when you put stronger next to stronger color, then nothing stands out. Everything's just screaming at you. So you need a combination of both. There's a Russian artist, deceased, Fedor Zakharov.
Yeah.
And you look at his paintings, very bright, very intense, and colors just really strong. But when you look at it more carefully, you'll notice there is a lot of gray color next to the stronger, more intense colors. And it's not always a value change. It's just maybe a color change within the same value. Excuse me. And that's what makes that brighter color effective, is the muted color next to it. So we'll have to add a couple of his pictures to the show notes so you can look at them and see the difference.
Then actually, nature does not offer, or I should say, very limited amount of time of the year, it offers very bright, intense colors. Generally, it's in the fall is when that happens. Or it could be in the spring. You know, let's say the poppies in the field, and we've seen so many poppies. You know, it's so attractive to because it's a red color. But most of the time, we're dealing with more grays in nature. It's just generally that's how nature is. It's a lot of grays. Now it could be a different intensity of grays within that. There's a range of it too. There's not like just grays, but still, it's more muted compared to something you squeeze straight out of a tube. And that's why it's important to understand mixing colors, because then you have more control over colors, because colors vary. I mean, there's got to be millions, billions of combinations of color out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why when you look at a computer monitor, it's just, I don't know how many colors, like ridiculous amount, because there's so many combinations. Yeah. It's so fine. But understanding color, the best way to understand it is just squeeze out your three mother colors, the primary is basically plus white. So you have your blue, yellow, and red. And you should be able to mix most of your, pretty much all your colors. When we're dealing with really intense, like some aqua kind of colors, real intense cerulean, that you do need sometimes that cerulean, you know, color in there. But that's, again, that's rare, that you don't need. That's why some of the phthalo colors are really good, but it's like giving knife to a baby if you don't have experience with color, because you're gonna, that's gonna be in everything. I mean, it possibly it can.
Yeah, it just kills the the harmony.
Yeah, it's like, let me put a little bit here and there. So,
which is the other thing too. I might be painting with just red, yellow, blue, and white, and I'm painting a landscape where there's a lot of aqua something or some real strong violet that I can't mix. But the point to the limited palette is I can get better color harmony with that than if I use five or six or seven more colors that are real intense colors to make that jump out. I might lose that bright color I see, but I'll gain harmony and actually a better variation with just those three colors than if I have too many. So I guess the key is the more colors on your palette does not make your colors better.
Yeah.
It creates more disharmony, and you learn more from a limited palette as well.
Yeah. Now, it depends where you're in your journey too. So if you're, if you're, let's say, more advanced painter, if you've been at this hard for, you know, many years, then, you know, you have a better understanding. If you're more beginning to middle of your journey, where's the end? I mean, there's no end to this, but, you know, you feel that you kind of have a pretty good grasp of it, but you're still, you know, so it depends, you know, where you're at in your journey. So the three colors plus white is a good thing if you're really struggling with color or want to learn more about color. Go back to the fundamentals, the basics, and it'll simplify things. Because as Phil said, just by having more colors on your palette, like you look at, I think Richard Schmidt has a fair amount. But there was somebody else, another painter, I'm forgetting. And well, yeah, but they've been painting for 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not a fair comparison.
Yeah.
So you gotta look at your situation, and again, the primaries plus white is wonderful. If you really are struggling with values, then you just want to go black and white. That's it. So take it back a notch even further. But it's rarely. So generally, when the areas you should use intense color is the area of focus, where you want the eye to go, because that's where the eye is going to go. It's going to go naturally to a bright, intense color, which is going to go there, because you can't help it. That's why the red barn and the poppy field and the fall yellow colors, you know, you can have a row of yellow trees, but you got to mute it in most areas and then just make that one particular area more vivid, more intense, less white, less blue in there. More, I wouldn't say straight out of the tube, but less muted colors, meaning less blue in there, less ochre. Let the natural pigment be, and then you put some grays around it, then the eye will definitely focus in on it. So,
And I have in art school we had 12 colors. And after doing that for about 8 years, I was really struggling with mixing colors. So I went as an exercise to red, yellow, blue. I think ultramarine blue, alizarin crimson, and cad yellow light and white. And started out as an exercise, and I kept that palette for 12 years. And I still have a ton to learn about color, but that I learned a lot from just using those three colors. And my kind of thought process was everything I mixed with that three primary palette, I put a little bit of everything into each mixture. Now, one color dominated. So if I had a red barn, it was red, tiny bit of yellow, and a little bit of blue. So everything was red, yellow, blue. It was just different amounts of each one. So something that was more blue, of course, had more blue in it and so on. But everything was slightly muted because I used all three each time. And at first, everything looked the same. But then the more I was able to have one color more dominant, and the more you work with it, the better you get at it. Then towards the end of the painting, like Gabor said, I would maybe drop one of the colors and just use two colors. And those areas would stand out more because they're not as muted. So, and it's a good way to learn to control the intensity and the grayness of a color so you can decide where your focal point is.
And Phil uses broken color real well. So we'll try to put an image or two in there too, where it's the same value, but different color within let's say a shadow area of a tree.
Yeah.
Phil does it really well. So broken color, again, is definitely another not trick, but it adds variety to an area. Otherwise, it would be too boring for the eye.
Yeah. The bigger areas, instead of just more detail.
Yeah.
Which is dark and light changes.
Yeah.
You can just add same value, different color.
Yeah. So it's more muted. You know, that's more an example of muted color because it's in the shadow, but different colors within that muted range. And you can create interest even in the shadows, which you should. You don't want the shadows to be dead. You want excitement into the shadows. Within, generally, you want to keep those values close. That's kind of the trick to shadows, is keeping values close. Color could be different, but values should be close of that color.
Yeah. Another good exercise is just to mix up three or four values of a gray using blue and orange or yellow and violet. And have that there and add it to the value you've mixed of your color. It's not as colorful because you're using more of a flat gray to mute your color as opposed to the complement. But it really helps you see variations of intensity when you add a little bit of a gray, same value, to each mixture. That way you don't have colors that are too intense unless you want them too intense. Yeah. Then you can leave out the gray.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes when you look at reference-wise, a color on your monitor or intensity of that color versus on your canvas is going to be different because you're dealing with a backlit monitor. So don't try to compare color of your painting to the color of the monitor.
Yeah.
It's a different beast.
Yeah.
Altogether. It's different. So, turn off your monitor at some point in the painting, just look at the painting on its own, because that if it has to live on its own, and that's how everybody will see it, like that. They're not going to have the photographic image or reference to use or the monitor next to that painting.
Yeah.
So don't, you know, use it as a stepping stool, but at some point you should concentrate more on the painting. Is it working? Is it not working on its own? And be careful with, these tools are great, but there are tools and we can run into the danger of using them too much, relying on the monitor too much for information. A higher quality image will not give you a higher quality painting. It just doesn't, it looks nice, on the monitor, but otherwise everybody would have great looking paintings.
Yeah, the problem with the monitor also, we tend to isolate like a shadow area or a light area and just stare at it and try and match that color, like Gabor said. And you're not comparing. You don't have any relationship going on there. And that's what you want to go for. Is a good exercise is to make your image black and white and see, judge the knowledge of color that you have and see where you're lacking.
Yeah.
And
Yeah,
or that's what the old guys used to use, black and white photography.
Or you can go just to aid you. You can flip back and forth a little bit, go from memory, maybe aid it a little bit, stay a few minutes, but then turn it back to black and white.
Yeah.
If you're really having a tough time, and then see where you can go with it, and you'll see that value is again more important than color. You can your color could be, let's say off from what the image was. I wouldn't know because when you show it to me, unless it's like ridiculously glowing, some meridian, some crazy color, but it would look good. I would say, okay, that looks good. If your values are good, I would, it wouldn't bother me that maybe it's a little different color. But I can live with that. I don't know. But bad value, no. Or drawing, for that matter. Design, yeah, no.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, we're kind of pushing you back to the more the fundamental parts of painting, is that this is a good discussion to have, but if you're not ready yet, then come back to this podcast in 6 months maybe,
yeah,
and re-listen to it.
A comment I get a lot in workshops is when we're working from references, I'll comment on a color in their painting that just jumps out of the picture. It doesn't stay in the picture. And that could be the value is off or it's too intense. And the comment back from the student will be, well, that's the color I saw in the photograph.
Yeah.
And that's where you're not thinking in terms of making your values and colors relate to each other in the photograph or in the painting.
Yeah.
Despite what the photograph says. And that's where painting outside comes in.
Yeah.
More importantly.
Yeah. And the more you do that, the more you get outdoors, the more, and I mean, obviously everybody's been outside, it's not the thing, but painting outside versus being outside is different too a little bit, because you're really observing for almost, you know, let's say hour and a half to 2 hours, just that scene. You really are looking at it for that time. Most people will not do that. Nobody's going to stand in front of a landscape for an hour and a half and stare at the same thing.
Right.
I mean, other than a photographer, a nature photographer, but even nature, I don't know, maybe, probably they do, because they have to watch the effects of light on the landscape, but the general public is not going to do that, but it's not their job, they shouldn't.
Yeah.
I guess there's no reason to.
Yeah.
But for us, we have every reason to do that, is to get better. It's like painting the model. I mean, you're going to stare at that model for hours, for like 2-3 hours. When you go to live drawing or live painting, that model is going to be in that position, so you're going to be staring at it. So that's why you learn. It's a repetitive process, looking, observing, looking back and forth. Also, when you're outside, when you're observing color, look out onto your subject more and study it, rather than try to be way too involved on your canvas, what you think it is. Especially, I'm talking about if you're in the learning stage.
Yeah. You can spend more. All this time looking at it, you're probably mixing.
Yeah, observe more.
Mix for a short amount of time, put it on the canvas, and judge it with what you see.
Yeah.
And
don't cut twice and measure once kind of thing. You know, do the other thing.
That's right.
Measure like 3 times and then cut once kind of thing. And the measuring part is the looking, so.
But outside, you develop your own color sense.
Yeah.
But if you strictly work from photographs, it's hard to develop a color sense other than a photographic color sense. So
yeah, and don't be formulaic about color either. Like, you know, aspen trees are this color, you know, your paintings will start looking the same way.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, you can paint from memory, that's a good thing, but there's no aspen tree that is the same. They're all uniquely different, a little bit different shades, a little different, and it's up to you as a painter to make it look interesting. If it's not, you know, generally a photograph, I mean, we just hear this, and when we do demos for classes, like, oh, the photograph didn't look as good as the painting. Well, yeah, I guess that's the idea, to use it as a starting point and improve upon it. But again, we're only improving upon the photograph, not actual, the literally physical scene. Physical scene is perfect. We're just trying to make it something that we can put on a canvas. And so that is it for today.
Yeah.
About color and muted color and all the good stuff here.
So get outside and develop your own color sense.
That's right. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to another episode of Easel Talk, the podcast that takes your art to the next level. Connect with us by joining our Facebook group, Easel Insight in Depth. Subscribe to and review our podcasts on iTunes and Stitcher. Check out our website, easelinsight.com, for more episodes and information. See you next time on Easel Talk.